show zile answer akonkalabye tekala
mutwe castof na ibigambo gabisa
aha
ngokola
paragraph aha that's how I was in school onaga ko bulazi wo bai ibigambo bisatu ebitanika answer aondekao tankwe paragraph so I saw this guy like painting like hey what you wokola I got my first job ne kuba paint zimbe chilamba I painted for 5 years and by 5 years I was like expert. I painted this whole room, my house, and spray painted this roof. And people have seen some of my work on Instagram when I'm doing my house. But that's what I'm saying, like, even when you don't know the skill, let's say you didn't get the opportunity, put yourself in that position. Just take it. Chikube.
Yeah, I'm from a beautiful place, the Pearl of Africa. Hailing with a 256, it's in my blood. That's a gem where the mountains rise. With stories untold, the tapestry of cultures unfolding, so vibrant and bold. A symphony of stars, a celestial light. The drums beating, echoing through the night. Just like a beacon of light, a reflection that's coming up from the Nile. I'm flowing straight into the heart of Africa with timeless stories untold.
Michael Mageni. Is that how you pronounce your name? Mageni.
It's Mangeni.
Mangeni.
Yeah.
Mangeni.
Mangeni.
Welcome to my podcast, sir.
Thank you, my brother Bonnie Chibuka.
Sigena kwesti banyomo luzungu because the guy I have today is from Uganda. He lives in the US. He's actually 2 hours away from me.
It's 1 hour and a half.
1 hour and a half, yeah.
Yeah.
Because actually you got here pretty quick.
Yeah, no traffic.
Yeah, no traffic. We don't have traffic on 96 East. Anyway, yeah, I like this because I like to have people on the podcast, people that I know who are able to come to my house. Because we see these podcasts online, I'm like, hey, man, a guy, they're all in the studio, they're in the same place, and biba binyuma. So that's anytime right. I get a friend to come and visit me,
man,
I actually get to Chibozi. I know a lot of people would be interested in knowing our lives, people back home, people in America, who know us. And today I want us to talk about our experiences in the United States.
Absolutely.
How we moved to Uganda. But before we go into how did we meet? How did I meet you? Or how do you remember we met?
So I remember it was like Saturday, and my wife was like, I got this message from this guy. He says he's Ugandan. And because you had seen her reel on Instagram of us making, was it Chikomando or rice and beans?
I think rice and beans.
Yeah. And so I saw that. And then I think we became friends on Instagram, and then we got our WhatsApp numbers, and then video called you right away.
that was weird.
Yeah.
It wasn't weird, but like it was crazy for me because I remember messaging her. I said, I've seen a video on Instagram.
Yeah.
And I've seen your husband. I feel like him and I can connect very well. Like, I had not talked to you.
Yeah.
I had not, like, seen you. I did not anything. But, like, just looking at you, I was like, I think I can connect with this guy. And you're wearing a University of Michigan.
Michigan, sweatshirt.
So I knew these people are around in Michigan.
Yeah.
So when we connected and I found out you're here, and then we met for the first time in Holland.
That was last August, right?
Last August. We met in Holland.
Yeah.
Kids. So that's crazy. And we were talking about off camera, we were talking about how Instagram has helped like a lot of people meet, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. You just get to connect with a lot of people that I didn't know. I had no idea that you live so close to us.
Like,
I knew there were Ugandans around, but through Instagram, now I have you as a brother, as a friend, because we talk like every week. And
I think like that has been life changing. And ever since we got connected, even when we take like 3 days without talking, I'm like, I've not called Mike. I've not called Michael. And so, and then Emily asked me too, like, hey, I've not seen you talk to Bunny. And I'm talk to Mike. I'm like, I need to call him. And then I just like shoot you a text because it becomes like part of life. And the other thing is, there's a way it helps with like the things we deal with, you know, like when I call you and we talk and we laugh and speak Luganda, it makes you feel at home.
Absolutely. And one time, like actually when we're just connected, my wife would make fun of me, like whenever I would be on the phone with you, it's like she would be like, are you talking to your boyfriend?
Yeah.
Because we just like would get on the phone and talk for like an hour.
Yeah.
And just
be
on video call.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I remember doing that. So sometimes I'll get a call and then I'll just step outside.
Yeah.
And then I walk around the house and hey, man, you're on the phone for a long time. Would say that on the phone for a long time, yeah. But it's different, and some people might not understand it, but it's definitely life-changing and helpful to have a friend in these foreign countries. I was just finishing a recording with another person who is a foreigner in Uganda. They're there for school,
yeah,
and they're Congolese, so I wanted to know their perspective of them living in a foreign country and for us living in America as foreign countries,
yeah,
and as foreign people. It's different, and there are many things that you go through when you don't have your family close by.
Absolutely.
You need to have those people next to you that you rely on, or like people that are helping you in life. So
yeah,
I'm glad to have you in my life, and I'm glad that we're able to be here today to do this recording.
Yeah, I'm happy too, because I think it's been in the making for since like last year. We gotta do this.
Yeah, we talked about you're from Uganda and you moved to the United States. I've shared my story of how I moved to the United States here.
Yeah,
what motivated you to leave Uganda to like come to the States?
Actually, like, it was never like the goal for me to move here. Like, I never had it in my wildest dreams that I'll be living in the United States. But some things you just like have no control over. Yeah. And then I met my wife, who is obviously from here, and then like we've always known that we want to live in Uganda. But when I started working on like getting my tourist visa and saw how hard it was to just get a tourist visa to come here, and being connected with her, we got other friends who are also in interracial relationships, and some of them it was really hard for them to like come over here and like be there for the birth of their children, and so we were just like, we never want to go through this, we never want to be apart from each other, like, and so when we spoke to an immigration lawyer
in Uganda,
it was here, like after I got my tourist visa back in 2016, we met with a lawyer, and they were like, yeah, the only way we can keep you guys together like without any issues, it's better like you move to the US, work on becoming a dual citizen, and then you can do whatever like you want to do after that. And so that's when it dawned on us to start going through the process of me becoming an immigrant and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that became a goal in 2017.
Yeah.
In 2019, when we moved here. Mm-hmm. And here we are. And the goal is to eventually move back home and raise our kids there, but to Uganda. Yeah,
that is amazing. There's a song that says there's no place like home, and I always think about it, like, no matter where you go, no matter, like, right now, even when we become American citizens, there's no place that's going to be like Uganda.
Absolutely.
So it's always, Uganda is always going to be in our hearts, in our blood, in everything that we do. You mentioned the dual citizen. Have you now got your dual citizenship or not yet?
I need to, right now I am an American citizen, but I need to apply and work on that and go through the Ministry of Internal Affairs to get that certificate and then get another passport before I can become a dual citizen.
I mean, I'm in the same boat as you, like, I gotta work on my dual citizenship because I'm already a citizen now. But going back a little bit, how easy or how hard was it for you to even process this stuff to come back here? Because I've talked about my story on the podcast here how I came. It was crazy. The visa. Talking about the visa part is, even when I was still a student, like, it was a struggle. I remember one time I went back to Uganda.
Yeah.
And they wanted me to, like, they were going to just renew my visa, then I come back to school. But that process ended up being so long, even when you provided that you were a student.
Yeah.
I'm coming home to visit my parents. I'm going to go back to the school.
Yeah.
So they called me at the embassy in Uganda and they were like, hey, you need to provide this information. You need to do this. They kept my passport for the whole time I was in Uganda.
That's crazy.
Till the day I was supposed to come back to the US and they still had my passport.
Yeah.
Then I had to get a friend who knew the congressman here and called the embassy, and the embassy had to give me my passport with the new visa. And that's how I came back to the US.
Yeah.
And when you talk about, like, visa stuff, it's a struggle. Talk about people missing big events. My mom missed our wedding because they didn't give her, like, a visa. And, like, they say you didn't have a way to prove that you're going to come back. You know, visa stuff is always hard.
It is hard and very frustrating. Mm-hmm. And I think, because there's just so many people that have done shoddy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so people with genuine reasons and who have a genuine cause to, like, travel are given a hard time because of that select a few that kind of are non-straightforward. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the reason why when people get those visas, they're like, you know what? I'm not going back to Uganda. Because they think about what they've gone through.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I talked about here is that's not fair, is how many times do people have to apply for this visa with the money not being refunded?
Yeah.
So you think about that. And
it is expensive. Yeah. It is an expensive process, like, emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
And then just even going to the American embassy and being there, it changes.
Yeah.
It changes the way you kind of see the world, like, because they take everything from you. They take your phone.
Mm-hmm.
They almost strip search you.
That place is, people who have been to the American embassy in Uganda, you know what we're talking about. Like, that place is just...
It is daunting. Yeah. It is daunting.
It is a hard place. You mentioned about, like, interracial marriage. What are some of the unique experiences that you've gone through that have challenged you, like, you've encountered in your relationship with your wife?
For me, it's been majorly a mind shift, like a mindset shift.
Mm-hmm.
Because all the while, like, growing up, I saw myself marrying a Ugandan.
Yeah.
I never saw me marrying a Mzungu.
Mm-hmm.
And then to just think about it, like, your soulmate could be across the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
It's just mind blowing. And we have so much in common that it's just so unbelievable.
Yeah.
Because, like, in my village in Busia, the town where we come from, it's called 7 Mile.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Yeah. My wife grew up in Detroit on 7 Mile.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
It is crazy. But it, as the relationship, it has had me see things so differently.
Mm-hmm.
Because she grew up here, I grew up back in Uganda, and just, like, trying to build a life together.
Mm-hmm.
But the common denominator has been, like, as being believers, like, mm-hmm. Christ.
Mm-hmm.
So that has always been, like, the center for our relationship.
Yeah.
So we haven't had to, like, butt heads on a lot of things,
mm-hmm.
because our Christian values are aligned. So that has been, like, a really, really good thing for me.
Yeah.
But I've also learned a lot of things, like, you gotta be independent, like,
mm-hmm.
The way finances are done here is very different from how we do finances back home.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just, like, life, how life is done here, and accountability, those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. I've seen myself grow in those areas, being in this sort of relationship.
Yeah, like finances you talked about. It's crazy how it's America crazy. Is. Most people don't understand it, don't get that part. But the other big thing you talked about was God.
Yeah.
A lot of interracial relationships, like, have a lot of struggles. they actually, there's a lot of things those relationships like deal with.
Yeah.
Especially people that are not Christians. If you know God in your life, there's a way you deal with certain things in your life.
And your values are kind of the same.
Yeah.
The same values. But if you do not have something that unites you, and it's just the physical attraction, because that comes a point where that doesn't really matter.
Yeah, because you think about somebody who's going to spend time with you, like if you're ever quarreling, fighting, arguing, like that's not a healthy thing to live in. Like you might get, you look at the physical appearance and stuff, but you think about your emotions, your life, and whatever you're going to be going through. So those are all things to consider. So
yeah,
it's crazy that you mentioned that, and I think we share the same views or beliefs or experiences that we've gone through. So when you came to the U.S., did you straight go to Livonia? You live in Livonia, right?
Yes, Livonia, which is like 30 minutes away from downtown Detroit.
Yeah. So you're 30 minutes away from Detroit, and like people, a lot of people in Uganda even know Detroit.
Yeah, I know Detroit. Like, I was a fan of the Pistons since 94. Like,
really?
Yeah, I know the Pistons. But I didn't know the Tigers.
Oh, yeah, I didn't know this because I didn't follow a lot of baseball. But so living near Detroit must offer like different pace of life compared to Uganda. How is, and you even talked about like how loud it is at your house. You're like, oh man, this place is quiet.
Yeah.
How is life like living around there? And there's a lot of people who have different perspectives of Detroit. I've had friends on the podcast here talk about Detroit. Some people are scared of Detroit.
Yep.
What is your opinion on that as somebody who lives, you might not live in Detroit, but you live closer, you're almost like in Detroit.
So it's different because, well, when people ask me where I live, I would say Detroit because that's where people know. But it's metro. And so the suburbs are very different from the city itself. So living out in the suburbs, especially when I just come out here, like you don't see people around. Like it will be the summer, you're like, where are the people? Winter time, where are the people? People just like to be indoors. That still bothers me up to now. Like people
are outside.
But living around there, like I've gotten a lot of opportunities, or I wouldn't say opportunities, like I get to go downtown a lot because that's where our church is. And then during the summer, we go to the riverfront, to just like walk by the riverfront. And I won't say that I'm scared because when I'm going down there, I know like where I'm going, what I'm going to do. And then I'm out of there.
Yeah.
But I know that there are certain places that you wouldn't want to be in. And I've heard of the east side being...
It's funny because my friend that I hosted on a podcast is from the east side. And he said, the east side is the worst place in Detroit. But he grew up there.
So they say, people talk a lot about the east side. But I've been to the east side, and for me, it's been okay.
Yeah.
Well, there are places that are really, really run down. Like you go to a neighborhood, and all the houses
are sketchy.
Sketchy, and then there's trash and stuff, which was shocking for me. Because when you're in Uganda and all the stuff you see on TV about America, it's
like, you know, right?
All glitter.
That's the same word. Like, I got shocked. Actually, I was in Los Angeles before even I was in America for a long time. I was in Los Angeles, and then we went downtown Los Angeles, and then you could see like homeless people on the streets, trash, and like, I'm like, wow, this is America. Like, it's crazy. It's crazy when you see the kind of stuff.
Yeah, it is, because I would be like, I would see the homeless, and like in Uganda, you see the homeless because they're begging, and I would want to offer them money, but. I've learned that sometimes you give them that money, and it's enabling what they're struggling with, like the drugs and stuff like that. So I've kind of let off a little bit. But that was really, really shocking for me. And also working like in the child welfare and seeing all the struggles and what the families go through, and the incredible support system that the country offers, but still the people do not seem to kind of benefit from. I'm like, if people in Uganda had this kind of support, we wouldn't see
a lot of them on the street.
Yeah, a lot of them on the street, and a lot of the struggle that we see here. But
I've thought about that, because I was actually, when you were just talking, I was like, I know America has those facilities for people, homeless people, to go shelter or something. But I feel like some people, I'm not going to say everybody, but if the country is offering something like that, like, why wouldn't you want to take it on? I think some people just want to be on the streets, because they think they get more money on the streets than what they'll get in the shelter. Or like, they think they will have a better life on the street to ask for that money than what the shelter will offer. So they would rather just be on the street and ask for $5, $10, and they just stay there. And like you said, you might give them money and you're just supporting whatever addiction they have or what they're going through. Yeah. So you will never know. But if the country is offering that support, I would hope that people will go and take on that support. For me, where I lived in Lansing, I live in the west side, but like, for me, the hardest part was hearing gunshots at night. Like,
really?
Yeah.
I've never had a gun since I've been here almost now 6 years.
Yeah.
It's coming to six, five. But I've never had a gunshot.
So, yeah, I've had a few. And I was saying, man, I can't live in this part of Lansing, man. It's just on the street, like on like houses are closer to each other. And I know in my neighborhood here, houses are closer to each other, but I've been here. I've never had any issue except from fireworks. It's just like you said,
fireworks.
It's quiet. It's peaceful here. I just drive from work, come to my house. I keep out of trouble. But like in Lansing, sometimes it's a place where it would be hard to keep out of trouble. Because even if you do keep out of trouble, I think trouble is easier to find you in Lansing or like in Detroit than any other place. So like, you might be there and somebody's coming and then something happens and then it just goes downhill from there.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, sometimes I'm just like on the news or scrolling my phone, and then you see something like someone was in their house and they still get shot.
Wow.
Because there's like a drive-by, and then you know how the houses are built.
Yeah.
It's easy for the bullets to go through. Because like just the other week, a kid had come back from school, like in Detroit, and they were just laying on their couch, and they got shot in the head.
Wow.
And it's just crazy, like how you would, like you have done no wrong to nobody, and because someone is just out there and they're shooting against each other, and I don't know why they're shooting, but somehow
that's what I meant when I said trouble finds you, because you might be in your house chilling watching TV and you get shot.
Like,
you're not out there like doing anything wrong.
Yeah.
But the other question I want to ask you, we talked about interracial marriages, like, has there been any negative or things that happened to you because of being an interracial relationship, like walking on the street or going through some experiences? Because sometimes you see people look weird, they look at you weird.
Yeah.
Or even your kid. I mean, I know our kids are still younger to go through certain things, but like, you as a person, have you encountered any of the kind of hatred and stuff being...
No. Yeah. Personally, no, I haven't. But my wife has.
Mm-hmm.
She's gotten a lot of some hate messages on Instagram.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she would break down. That was last year and a couple of years back. I don't think she's gotten any now. But back then, it was just like quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, where do you find the time to message someone you've never met?
I know.
And just express how you feel. But personally, I haven't. I don't know if I don't seek it out or if I'm blind to it. Because I try to just like try to see the good around me. If someone needs help, if they need me to hold the door, when they're walking in, I'll hold the door and just go about my way. Yeah. So
I do the same thing. Like, I treat people nice. Like, when I go to the store, somebody's coming in, I'll open the door for them or hold the door for them. Or like, that's not the first thing that pops up in my head, that this person is a different skin color than me.
Yeah.
Unless like, that's how they or somebody does something awkward or weird like you didn't expect. But I've also not been in a lot, unless I've forgotten, but like there's not one I can remember, like I'm gonna say this is an instance or something. It's top of my head, I don't remember any. But you, there's some that you can see and like, you see people.
Yeah, like one time, okay, I can remember the only one time I've been pulled over by the police.
Mm-hmm.
I've lived over almost 6 years now, but I've only been pulled over once.
Yeah.
And I was in my line of work sometimes before I switched. I would have to transport kids to parenting time and stuff like that. So I was in my car driving in this rural area. It's called Adrian. It's mostly
Adrian, Michigan.
Mostly white people that live in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a white kid in my car. And then I would see people like looking at me weird. And then the police came out of nowhere, and they were like right behind me. And then I turn right, and then I see the lights go on. And then I pull over, and it's a female cop. And then she comes out. She's like, "Do you know why I pulled you over?" I was like, "No." She's like, "You were speeding." "Nah, ma'am. I didn't dispute, mm-hmm. but I wasn't speeding. I knew why." Mm-hmm. I knew why. She was like, "Where are you going?" I told her, "I'm taking this kid to parenting time." And then I showed her my ID. She asked me if I had been if I'd been stopped before by the police. I was like, "No." And then she ran my details. I gave her my insurance and stuff, and she sent me on my way. But I knew the reason was mm-hmm. because I had a white kid in the back of my car.
that's always like scary moments for me. Yeah. I've lived in America for 10 years. I've never been pulled over by a cop. Not even once. I've never even been in a car that got pulled over by a cop. But only time I've encountered the cop was when I crashed my car. And I'm the one who called the cop.
Oh, okay.
So I called the cop to come at the scene. And then
was it the state police? The blue police?
Yeah. And then he was laughing at me. He didn't really. And he was laughing. I was like, "How did you crash your car?" So I explained to him. I think he was. Somebody told me he would have given me a ticket because they said like he would have said like I was over speeding in bad weather conditions.
Yeah,
because like that's how my car happened. But I definitely have had stories of people going through some things. I remember having one of the guys on the podcast. Actually, he said he was driving a BMW. It was a nice car,
mm-hmm.
and they pulled him over because they didn't think. Like he stole the car or he has a nice car that he's selling drugs or something like that. And they just pulled him over and they didn't really have a reason why they're pulling him over. He wasn't speeding.
Yeah.
He wasn't doing anything, but it's just because he was driving a nice car. And, you know, maybe the assumption is like some people don't have to have these kind of cars. So
yeah,
those kind of incidences. I still pray to God. And I mean,
same.
Obey the law. If I get pulled over, I'll give you my ID. Yeah. I'll answer you with respect. And I do that on a normal day. Like, even if it's not a police.
Yeah.
You ask me a question, I'm going to respect you. I'll give you an answer. You ask me for something. But if you ask me a question and it's out of my comfort, like, I'll ask you, "Hey, why? Why are you asking me? Why are you telling me this?" You know?
Yeah.
Like, but if you ask me for ID, because I know police has to ask you for your identification, and you have to give it to them. So I'm not going to be, sometimes we become big headed and then we cause the police to react a bad way.
To be angry.
Because if he asks you for ID, give him an ID. Just
give them the ID.
And just do what he has asked to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I asked about that because I wanted to know. I hosted somebody on the podcast too, who is an interracial marriage, and they shared their story, what they've been through. And actually their husband is in Uganda and she shared her experience when she came to the US. So it's always fun to listen to another person's experiences and life. You are a dad. Your son is 2.
He's 2 years.
Yeah. How has that been, fatherhood? How did you ever prepare for it, or how did that get you? How did he find you? I would say.
I think I've always been ready to be a dad.
Okay.
Because I've just like love children. Mm-hmm. I love children. And
yeah, because that's your job line too.
Yes.
Okay.
But it's just been like super, super incredible to see someone from nothing, like just like grow,
mm-hmm.
and to know that I'm also making my own people.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just been incredible. Because I really sometimes I struggle to come around to the fact that I'm an adult right now.
Yeah,
and I'm a dad. I'm like, just a few years ago, like 2008, I was just finishing my senior six.
Wow. Yeah.
And now here a year, I'm a husband.
Yeah.
And a father as well. But that has just been, yeah, super incredible to have that kind of responsibility and transition from a phase of just being a husband to a dad. And because at night, sometimes, you know, you gotta be up mm-hmm. late in the night
mm-hmm.
and then like be ready for work.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't trade it for anything. And mm-hmm. to, yeah, see his smile. Mm-hmm. He's learning to play football.
Yeah.
So that is just, he's like my tiny buddy. Mm-hmm. He's my tiny buddy.
Yeah, it's fun to watch you guys. And every time I FaceTime you or call you on the phone and yeah. you're with him, it's fun to just see you guys watching. And now he was here. You guys are at my place today and playing around, calling my name all the time. Yeah. Where's Bonnie? And just like, it's fun to see the baby like that. Yeah. That has been with my daughter, Isla. I don't want to say I wasn't ready, but I wasn't expecting it.
Yeah.
Like I was like, I'd given up. Like I didn't know. And I remember when it happened, I was like, I can't believe it. Because Emily told me, I was like, no, I don't believe it. She was like, you see, there's two lines on here. I'm like, nah, you got to get a digital one. So we got a digital one and it says, I was like, no, I still don't believe it. I'll believe it if you go to the hospital. And then went to the hospital for the first ultrasound, and yeah, she was pregnant. I was like, no, I don't believe it still. Yeah. Like, I still, like, doubted. But as far as, like, we wanted to do more ultrasound, it happened. When she was born, like, that was different. Like, it was different in that hospital. I remember I was listening to the song by the Maverick City, Little Miracles, because I feel like, Isla was like a little miracle. Like I wasn't expecting it. And like,
absolutely.
It was like, he just called me up. Every time I listen to that song, and even just talking about it right now, makes me teary. And I don't want to cry on the podcast, but so that's what it was. And ever since she was born, like she's my happy, like mm-hmm. she makes me happy. And the way I love her, like a lot. And
it's crazy to think about that. You can love someone that much, yeah. you know?
Like, I come back from work, I pick her from daycare, and every time she smiles at me when you open the door or when you go and open the door and the ladies at daycare have her, it's crazy. And
it's really cute.
It's amazing, and it has changed my life. So I wanted to ask you about how that has changed your life too and how you've loved it. I was watching a reel on Instagram yesterday. This guy was coming back from work. He works 50 hours a week.
Wow.
He came back home. I was like, guys, he made a recording before he pulled in his driveway. He's like, I want to show you guys why I wake up every morning.
I think I've seen it.
And he turned on the phone and then he drives into his garage and his daughter was just on the door looking at him. I almost cried watching that because I just put myself in that situation. I'm like, imagining like Isla being there waiting for me. And that has given me a reason to work hard and just make sure that I want to give her the best. I mean, there's a lot of things that come with parenting, teaching her what to do and all that, but I want to give her what my parents didn't give me. Not because my parents didn't do a good job, but I want to add on to where my parents did and just help her in whatever she needs, support her. And not like spoiling her, but like, because if she needs something, I would want her to have it. But also like teaching her like good principles of life and understanding and knowing, so that kind of stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah, to actually even just backtrack, when we were pregnant, I don't know, for some reason I was just so certain that my firstborn was gonna be a girl.
Yeah,
because I had a dream 3 years before he was even born. And I told Kelsey, and like, our firstborn is a girl. And the thing is, with us, we never found out until
we did
he was
the same
born.
Thing. Yeah, we did the same thing.
So all this while, I'm like, yeah, baby girl in there. I'm calling her Leah. That was going to be the name. And everyone, I had convinced everyone that he was a girl. And then we're in the hospital and boy child comes out. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
I sat down. I was like in some sort of shock because I was like, the doctors let me announce.
Mm-hmm. I did the same thing too. Yeah.
It's like, it's a boy. Yeah. And it was just incredible. Yeah. It was just incredible.
But she told me that she knew it was a boy. So you say she was a girl, but she thought it was a boy. Kelsey said,
I had convinced her too.
Yeah.
I had. So right now, I try, but she's like, no, not this time.
Yeah.
This time you're not throwing me off.
So yeah, we did the same thing. Actually, I had to announce. But for us, we knew. I mean, we didn't know, but my heart said it was a boy. No, as a girl.
Yeah.
And it was a girl. So we're gonna be shocked if it was a boy. So we both knew like it was a girl.
Yeah.
And we had the name picked out. We actually didn't have a name for a boy.
Really?
No.
You gotta have a continuous.
I think we had a name, but like we wanted to name him Bonnie Jr.
Yeah.
But then we had another name. But if we had a boy that day, we're gonna have a hard time coming up with a name because we're gonna have to have it like spot
yeah,
on.
Yeah, because they gotta make like the birth certificates and stuff. Yeah, we had both names. Just in case it's a boy.
I don't remember what other name we had saved in for. But you said you work as a social worker. You mentioned it a little bit. Is it a social worker?
It is in the realm of social work. Yeah.
You've shared a little bit of a story, but like what have you encountered like in the wide-range challenges like here in America? Because I know in Uganda, the kind of stories you'll find will be different from the US. What kind of stories do you, and I don't know if your work lets you talk about these things. But,
it's absolutely okay because it's, we're out here to create awareness. You know about the foster care system?
Mm-hmm.
Like it's starting to become, I think in Uganda, there is a few agencies in Uganda that do foster care, like Child's Eye Foundation. I used to work for them. They do an amazing job. But out here, I've seen that it's a lot. Most of the children that are in the system, the foster care system, you find that their parents were also in the system.
Mm-hmm.
So to some, it's like just a cycle.
Yeah.
And I see a lot of people becoming parents and they have absolutely no idea what parenting is about, like what you gotta do to care for a kid. And then just like a mistake, you do something wrong,
mm-hmm.
and then CPS is called and then the kid ends up in the system. So I've just seen there is that gap, a lack of knowledge about parenting,
mm-hmm.
that has led a lot of these children getting into foster care. And if that was addressed, I feel like there will be less and less mm-hmm. children. And then there is also the addictions. Lots of people struggle with the drugs, alcoholism, and other vices. There's just so many things that people do that kind of limit their capacity mm-hmm. To care for the children. And then the kids end up in care. And then some kids will just like stay in foster care their entire life, bouncing from home to home, home mm-hmm. to home. Which is unfortunate. And then once they age out of the system, if these people are not like very intentional about breaking that cycle, then they will also have children and then the children will Absolutely. Yeah, just get back in the system. Yeah. If not, like you'll have kids that end up becoming juveniles, mm-hmm. and then from like juvenile detention, they end. Once they get out, come back to society, it's they don't fit in society, mm-hmm. and then you find that they're the ones doing crimes, and then they end up in prisons.
Yeah.
So there's just that there is a lot of work that needs to be done, and a lot of a shift. I find that policy is sort of a hindrance. I feel like as the state or as a government, not a lot of support is being accorded to the families.
Mm-hmm.
I feel we need to do a little bit more in having these families stable and just being patient a little bit. And giving them a chance to raise their children instead of removing them at the first chance you get.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they should give them more chances than just taking them away, like right away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or just like a lot of more support. Because these kids, they'll come into care because the parent does not have stable housing. They're mm-hmm. living in a hotel. And if we can channel the energy in trying to address the issue, why is parent living, why are they living in a hotel, or why are they on the street? Mm-hmm. What can we do to help them find accommodation and mm-hmm. have the children and have them raise their children instead of just removing the children and then trying to work with the parents when they're not with their children? Because it can be a lot
mm-hmm.
and it can lead, if you're not very strong-willed, they take your children away, you can find yourself doing things that you wouldn't have done if you still had the children with you.
That is true. That is crazy to think about that perspective because, in America, most of the people back home, you would think, oh, America life is good. There's no such things. But then you hear those stories. And
It can be hard. It can be like really, really hard and emotional. And you feel like you're working, but you don't see the change that you desire, which mm-hmm. can be gut-wrenching.
That is hard. But thanks for the good work that you're doing and whatever people out there that are doing this work too, because all that you do is to help these kids get a better life, get another chance in life. So it's always amazing. So I'm going to switch gears a little bit here. And people who are watching this, you can see my man came in with a jersey of Manchester United.
Yes, sir.
A diehard.
And we just beat Liverpool.
This is recorded on the 17th of March. Manchester United just beat Liverpool in FA quarterfinals.
Quarterfinals.
We just watched the game together. It was a good game. So how did you get into Manchester United? I'm not a big fan of Manchester United. So
I'm not a big fan of Arsenal.
You're lying. how did you get into like supporting Manchester United? What was the journey like?
So I started supporting United in 1997.
Wow.
Because of my big brother.
Okay.
He had friends that were Arsenal, mm-hmm. Arden Arsenal fans.
Yeah.
And so they would make fun of my big brother.
Mm-hmm.
And I adore him. So I was like, I just wanted to like stand in for him and just like be on the same side as my big brother. And that's how I started falling in love with United.
Yeah.
97.
Wow.
97. Before I was even 10 years old, man.
Wow.
I was like eight, seven.
Yeah, you got into this before I did. I started supporting Arsenal 2004.
Yeah.
And it was after that Arsenal, Yesinga, when they won the unbeaten,
the Invisibles.
Like, his team is great. I was watching Thierry Henry like throw down Tottenham players. I'm like, oh my God, this is my team.
Yeah.
But the sad note is, ever since that time,
we've never seen
Premier League. This season we're there. But but no, this is just football. I think with football, I like this, like
the banter.
Same. You supporting Manchester United is not gonna make me love you any less, you know.
That's true. But that's the thing. Like, as you grow, you kind of learn to regulate yourself. Because as a younger, when I was still much younger, I used to support United with my heart.
Like, yeah.
They lose a game, I'm not eating food. I'll get a fever.
So the time Manchester United beat Arsenal 8-2, yeah. I was in high school. I never went to class for the whole week because I didn't show up to class for the whole week.
Were you in boarding school?
I was in boarding school.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was in boarding school and I just said I was sick. I kept every morning I'd wake up, go to the sick bed and just sleep. I wasn't sick. I was just didn't want to go to class because I was scared of some friends who were going to talk to me about Manchester United. And then I know how I was going to face my friends about Arsenal. And I was sad too. Like, I hated it. But I don't think right now I'm grown. Like, yes, I would be sad that we lost the game, but you got to move on.
Yeah, but that's the society that we've grown up in, because you'd have Arsenal guys, Liverpool guys, and I don't think I know anyone. My kid brother, he's 16. He's a Man City fan.
There's a few Man City fans. I know some Man City fans. Yeah. But yeah, like the thing is, we grew up Manchester United or Arsenal?
Liverpool.
Yeah, or Liverpool.
But you would find, yeah, most guys that were older supported Liverpool because when they were growing up in the 80s, Liverpool was on fire. Yeah. And then as the 90s, it's United, Arsenal. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And like people, even Arsenal players, they say, we hate Tottenham. Like that is, I just go, that one, I'm a bandwagon. I don't know why we hate Tottenham.
Yeah.
I mean, we are both rivals from North London. I know that in North London derby. But for me growing up, it was Manchester United. And that's what it is for me. Like, for me, it's Manchester United. Like,
because you would see it even on TV.
Yeah.
The Patrick Vieiras against the Ruud van Nistelrooy against Roy Keane.
Yeah.
Like, it translated from the pitch to us. Yeah. It was just like...
But it's funny because I have a lot of Manchester United friends. Like, a lot of Manchester United friends. Yeah. Like, a lot of them. But again, like, that goes back to say, like, for me, yeah, this is about football. And once the game ends... We are like, even when the game is going on, I just like to just talk my trash and talk the trash back. It's the fun of the game, but like that doesn't go into affecting our relationships.
Absolutely.
And that's what I wish people would do, even with these things of politics and stuff.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
You can support whoever you want.
Who you want.
But the moment you let your political views make you hate another person, then you're putting those political views in front of that relationship.
That's
like,
it's wrong. Yeah,
you can support, even if like I don't like this person, I'm not gonna hate you because I don't like that, but that person is not us, it's not you and I,
it's not,
you know, it doesn't even know your name, they don't even know your name. Like, even in soccer, in Manchester United, those players don't know us.
Nobody.
So for me to hate you because you're supporting Manchester United is like pointless.
Yeah,
I know you.
Yeah,
I'm gonna be seeing you. So I wish people would do that, like knowing that somebody having a different opinion, somebody having a different view, doesn't affect the relationship you two have.
No,
you have your own view, you have your own reason why you're supporting this person. Let your friendship, let your relationship go on.
Yeah,
it's sad that you see even families separating.
Yeah.
Because somebody is supporting this person and then the other one is supporting this person. It's really crazy these years that the world has got to that. But for me, I'll respect anybody no matter what. Even if you're supporting the person I don't like, you're always going to be my friend.
Yeah.
Like, that's not coming unless you choose not to. But I put our friendship and our relationship ahead of everything that in this world.
Absolutely.
So,
that's me too. That's me too.
So it was a great conversation. We're almost coming close to the end of the recording, and having you on here is always good to talk to you.
Yeah.
But one question I'll end with here, actually two, is what advice would you give to an immigrant or individual who is considering to move to a new country?
What I would tell them is, when you get here, go to school. I don't care if you've studied in Uganda, you have your degree in Uganda. When you get here, they look at it different. It's a bit different. So you get here, go to school if you can. And if you can go to school without the student loans, that's even better.
Mm-hmm.
Just stay away from the credit card people.
That is true.
That is a trap.
Mm-hmm.
That is a trap. Stay away from the credit cards. Like, live a life as if you're in Uganda, do not go and just start taking stuff on credit. So yeah, I go here and I always knew I wanted to go back for and get my master's, and I almost did like start back in Uganda. My undergrad is from UCU, but I got here and looked around. I had like 2 years to look around and see what program that I really wanted to do. So right now I'm almost done with school at the University of Michigan, getting my master's in public administration and policy.
That's why
I was talking about policy earlier, because I'm very, very passionate. Like, we need to get policy that works, because that changes lives. It does transform lives. So immigrants, you get here, go to school.
Mm-hmm.
Go to school that will like change the ball game for you.
Yeah. I like what you mentioned earlier, and I want to emphasize that like a lot of people, when they get an opportunity to come to America, they want to right away leave the American life, the American dream. And that thing is going to drive you so fast. So you know, fast. Like when you have that desire of wanting everything that you see.
Like real quick.
Yeah, real quick. Like it takes time. Give yourself time. Don't put yourself on pressure, because that's how you end up in debt, and that's how you end up failing. And I see this from a lot of people, even when they're in Uganda, they'll be like, you can't be an American, you say you're poor. It's not necessarily like you're poor.
No.
But you have to make some good financial decisions.
It
doesn't mean like when you have money in your account, it's for buying a new camera. It's for buying a new... It's not. Like having money in your account doesn't mean that it's money to spend.
Yeah.
You know, you might have bills, you might have this. So there'll be time when you have a financial discipline, you'll be like, okay, I have money in my account, but it's accounted for.
Yeah.
And when somebody reaches out to me and is like, hey, I need some money, I don't have money right now, because the money I have is accounted for.
Yeah.
But that's the thing that people back home don't think about. Like every time when they think you have money on account, it's to spend.
It's to spend. No.
No.
You got to create a budget, stick to that budget. Like, I know this goes to that. This goes to that. Like, I have a set amount for like charity back home, like things that if someone needs like some sort of help, I have like a fund for that, and once it's depleted.
Yeah
So I never like try to go over, but if the Lord continues blessing me, then that fund will also continue to increase. But just like going to school, because there's so many things that you can do to add to your skill set while you're here. You can go to community college. You can learn like coding online and stuff like that. So having a diploma or a degree from here, it makes a big difference to an immigrant.
And also learning a skill. And I remember, I think I saw somebody did this topic on that already. Like when you're in Uganda and you have plans to come to the US, or even if you don't have plans, learn a skill.
Yeah.
We get haircut done here in the States. Those people make a lot of money.
They do.
And somebody in Uganda would look at being a barber as some cheesy painters.
And I used to be a barber.
Like,
I used to cut hair, like, I started in my senior four back.
Yeah.
And that was in 2006, and carried on until like 2013. I just like got bored. I just got bored of cutting people's hair.
But like you get to America and that skill is going to save you. You're going to make a lot of money, like painting. I painted for like 5 years and I was just painting. And even if you don't have a skill, and this is what I'll tell people, when you come to America, even if you don't have a skill, put yourself in position to be able to do anything that's available. When I came to America, I didn't know how to do roofing, those shingles. But the lady was offering $200 to somebody who can do the shingles for her. So what I told her was, I talked to a friend who was American that has done shingles before. I was like, hey, there's this job for me to do shingles. I've never done it before. Can you give me any tips?
Yeah.
He gave me some tips and we watched a YouTube video together. I watched the YouTube video that night, and the next day I went to the lady's house. I was like, hey, I'm here to do your shingles. I went up the roof. I ripped off the shingles. I put on new ones. And that guy came over to kind of help me or see what I did. To say, yeah, that's good. Because he gave me transport. I didn't have a car. So he came over. I called him. I was like, hey, I'm done. Come look, check out my work and give me an okay. I put the roof there and the lady gave me my $200.
Yep.
She never called me that the roof was leaking or anything. But it's because I put myself in that position. Painting, when I started painting in America, yeah. I had never painted back in Uganda. My dad, so I told the lady, yeah, I know how to paint. No, this was at a college.
Yeah.
I know how to paint. They gave me a brush. I mean, they could see that he wasn't very good, but the guy I was working with was good at helping you get better.
Uh-huh.
So he's like, he would help if you hold the brush this way. So then he shows you. And then when they show you, and for me, Nezira Kulabako. Like those people in school, yeah. They know, like, you don't know an answer, somebody shows you the answer.
That's how I
was in school. Onaga Kobulas, you won't buy Bigambo, Satu, every time you get answer. I won't take out. Dankwe paragraph. So I saw this guy, like, painting, like, hey, what's your work? I got my first job, Nenkuba paint, Chizumbe Chiramba. I painted for 5 years, and by 5 years I was like expert. I painted this whole room, my yeah. house, and spray paint this roof. And people have seen some of my work on Instagram when I'm doing my house. But that's what I'm saying. Like, even when you don't know the skill, let's say you didn't get the opportunity, put yourself yeah. in that position. Togana mulimundi, asibi mani. Just take it. Chukube.
Kuba mentality. Mulimundi, Uganda, like wuboya gara muntu kola chintu. Osasula.
Mm-hmm.
It is cheaper in
yeah.
Uganda.
Yeah.
Neno,
uh-huh.
Those handy jobs are about by charging a cent.
Mm-hmm. My aunt paid plumbing. My aunt paid $2,000 to paint her house. Can you we'll get $2,000 in Ugandan money? Mm. Million inga make up.
Zitinga munana.
Munana.
Yeah.
Million munana kusiga nyumba ya amount.
Ngati just him says, if you're not Oguze Ranji or Guzevichi Brush, yet as they could see Gabusiz.
So that's a good advice that you give somebody. But I have three questions that I want to ask you before I let you go. What has been a life lesson you've learned in life to this point?
To see the good in others and just be willing to learn and putting yourself, being vulnerable,
mm-hmm.
yeah. Because when you put yourself on a certain pedestal, you don't allow yourself that flexibility to kind of break mm-hmm. and rebrand yourself. Because you think, this is who I am, mm-hmm. this is how I'm made. Like, you lose out on a lot and a lot of opportunities.
Yeah. That's good. That's a good answer. The next one is, what gets you excited about life?
You know, there is that verse in the Bible that says, God's mercies are new every morning. I think it's, I forget the book. So just like being able to know that today, like tomorrow will be very different from today.
Mm-hmm.
And just knowing that the opportunities out there are limitless. Like, I never saw myself sitting here. My plan was like graduate, work with an NGO somewhere out there in Molata. And then like work myself back into the city, because I was like, I just want to like go out there, mm-hmm. put my head down and just like whack.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can have plans. It's okay to have plans, but sometimes it doesn't pan out the way you think it will. And like, here I am.
Actually, that's my favorite verse in the Bible. Like Proverbs 16:9 is, we make plans, but the Lord determines our steps. So no, but it would be unfair for me to leave you without telling the people this story, because this story is funny. How we met, and we were talking on the phone, and I was telling you the schools I went to. I went to St. John's. Like, you told me, St. John's? Yeah, we had kids that went to that school.
Yeah, we had students out there in St. John's, and then we'll always be at the market in Wakiso,
yeah.
at the health center.
Yeah.
It was just, it was crazy because like we could even have like
seen each other,
but in that moment, like we didn't know each other.
But it's small world that even when I saw you, and that when you told me that story, I went on to believe that I'd never talked to you, I'd never seen you, but when I saw your face, I texted your wife, I'm like, I feel like I connect with your husband,
yeah,
even without talking to you.
And like, it was Instagram, not even mine.
Yeah, and then when we met, I'm like, yeah. And then we talk about Wakiso. I was like, Wakiso, you're from Wakiso? I used to be in Wakiso in Namusina. It's high school. Yeah. Like, small world. And that's how
small,
we met.
Small world.
Anyway, Michael, it was great talking to you, having a conversation with you. Same, my final question is a signature question on the podcast. Who would you like to see on this podcast next? And you're going to help me find that person. Nibabari mo Uganda tuja mufuna tumuteke ku studio, even if it's in America.
Yeah, there is a guy bamuita namuko wa Peter. Right now, Abira, Massachusetts,
okay.
Boston.
Okay.
But he has worked with refugees, in Uganda. Na wana kula ni domestic violence victims. I think he's he's a well of knowledge. And I just like it would be nice for him to kind of highlight those areas so that people can get an understanding and appreciate some of the work that goes into like working with the refugees and domestic violence. Because abantu abasinga boyogera ku domestic violence tebamanyi bichi ebigenda maso, ba bayinza olowooza nti taata akuba maama. Tebamanyi the ripple effect that has. So it would just be nice to get uyu namuko wa Peter.
Namuko wa Peter. Tukwesunze sewe sawa yona tukwagala ku podcast. We'll link up with him, connect with him. But once again, thank you very much for the visit and thank you very much for being on this studio. Yeah, I hope people will learn from this story and the little conversation we've had together.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Gabi, bye bye.
Hey there, this is Bonnie Kibuka, the host of the Ugandan Boy Talk Show. Thanks for watching and listening to my podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you share it with a friend and recommend somebody to this podcast. Don't forget to leave a feedback on this podcast because that's how we grow. And also don't forget to share, like, subscribe, and comment. Join us on our social media platforms on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. So we would love to hear from you. Thank you very much and be blessed.